Hey guys, Sean here, Fightful Select. I know some of you are like, hey, what the hell's this show? Well, in order to pass some of the time during the quarantine, I've been watching some additional shows beyond the Raw, SmackDown, all that. And I felt like doing a little bit of a bonus show about all the content, the wrestling stuff that I've been watching. Now, I cover Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW, and then Steven Jensen covers MLW, Impact, Ring of Honor, all that. But there's a lot of stuff that falls in between, a lot of that WWE Network content. These won't be super in-depth, but just my thoughts on each one of these. And let me tell you, WWE Network is knocking it out of the park. I'm a longtime wrestling DVD collector, and I specifically love the documentaries. Like, if I could get rid of all the pay-per-view ones, I probably would. I've got a bunch of those I'm looking to unload, and some of the top 50, top 10 lists are fine, but the documentaries are where WWE thrives, and they are still doing so many. And the thing is, the WWE Network, even though it has replaced physical media, for me, personally, it affects my connection or my collection. It's not as big. It's not as robust. I don't buy anything anymore. But man, as far as being cost effective, you're spending half as much money on the WWE Network every month as one DVD would be. So I think that's pretty cool. And not only that, things like the Tegan Knox documentary would not have come out for many reasons. One, they would not have been able to get that DVD out in time for it to even matter. It would have taken 3, 4, 5 months maybe for them to get physical media into stores, produce it, do all the artwork, all that. It just would have taken forever. And by then, it wouldn't have hit nearly as hard. And Tegan Knox isn't in the middle of a giant push right now or anything, but she's interesting and she's got a great story. And I got to hear the story of her comeback on WWE Network thanks to their like 20, 25 minute documentary. And that's a world of learning that I haven't been able to experience in the past with WWE productions. And I've said this a ton of times. Learning is my favorite thing about what my job is, whether it be from you guys, the wrestlers themselves, or just watching stuff. And the comeback was a really good look at everything. It chronicles, I don't want to use that term, I guess, since there's a chronicle of Drew McIntyre. It looks at her being signed out of her tryout and uprooting her life and the type of battle that that was to begin with. How she didn't hesitate, but then the double ACL tears, well, not double, but the ACL tears she sustained consecutively. God, that was humbling, man. To see her try to finish that match against Rhea Ripley the second time out, have it give out, and just collapse underneath the weight. Oh, my God. That was sad to watch, and it's something that I never got to watch. I didn't watch the injury footage at that point. But man, it makes her so likable too. And WWE's got to show excerpts of this on TV. They're going to have a tough time filling out some of their schedule over the next couple months. They need to put her on TV with this. Like, you don't even have to have her wrestle. Just walk through that, eventually build up to something and get her a good win. I loved hearing from Shayna Baszler, Dakota Kai, Piper Niven. The only thing I thought was a little bit weird, they kind of wedged in, oh, well, she finally got out of the house and she watched Captain Marvel. And Sarah Logan was like, yeah, I'm really glad she got to go watch Captain Marvel and stuff. And I was like, man, they're leaning in awful heavily to that. But it's a really great story. It's a really great look at how she battled her way back. While we're on the subject of WWE Network, the WWE 24 with Edge had to have been one of the best things that I've watched from a WWE production, period. Jeez, man. And this started off as just a WWE 24 about him, supposedly. And when I saw his documentary many years ago, you could tell that he was happy and content with moving on past wrestling. And I didn't really know the timeline of his surgeries and meeting Beth Phoenix and all that, but that was a great story to hear about how he met Beth Phoenix, because I don't know about you guys. To me, they're one of the most beloved wrestling couples that there are right now. Beth Phoenix, one of the best in the world as a women's wrestler. Edge was one of the best in the world as a men's wrestler. And they both met after Edge's career, towards the end of Beth's career. And you got to hear about how Edge, even though he had that first surgery, the second one's really what fixed him. And if you want to see a pro wrestler's mentality, that is Edge, who takes a tumble off a bike with Sheamus, and his first thought is, ha, maybe I can wrestle again. Oh, man. And I never watched any of his acting projects. I wasn't a Vikings or a Haven guy. So to see what he did there was very cool for me. He talks about his mother, and man, that's emotional. And seeing her at Edge Appreciation Night and him helping her do the hand gesture, that was so cool. That was so great. This one, for me, hit home. I would say I had like two last favorite wrestlers before I got into MMA and pro wrestling coverage and had to avoid the bias a little bit. But Edge was one of them. Shelton Benjamin was the next. Edge was just somebody who stood out to me. Even though he was reminiscent of Raven a little bit, I thought that he stood out above the pack of the new people in the WWE that came in 1998. And to see him go and do all that he did and then retire early, man, that one hit me in the heart. So to then be in attendance at Toronto, in Toronto, for when he did his first physical angle in 9 years, man, I popped for that. And not a lot of wrestling does that to me. Sometimes being live for AEW shows do, because the crowd, it's really dependent on the crowd for me. If the crowd's into it, I'm more into it. I'm a little more vocal. And that one did it for me. I loved seeing Edge in there training with Beth Phoenix and doing some in-ring work with her and with Dash Wilder. I was surprised they left that in, considering he's going to hit the bricks. I'm also surprised that we didn't see some more footage of the Revival in the ring with him before that, because it had happened another time. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but it had happened again. I think some pictures, maybe some video had emerged from that. But then this documentary transitioned from, hey, what's he up to he's coming back. And he had put out there like, yeah, I kind of had to lie because I didn't want everybody to know I was coming back. This was an hour and a half or so, and it is must watch. It's the most important thing to watch that we're going to talk about today. WWE 24 with Edge is unbelievable. Untold, Rodzilla Runs Wild. This was fun. Hearing Eric Bischoff talk and Hulk Hogan talk and Dennis Rodman himself talk, I wish they could have gotten Karl Malone for this. This was not nearly as good as a lot of the other stuff that I saw, but again, this is one of those things that has the benefit of being covered that would not have been covered on a DVD. Unless WWE did like a big series of these and then released them all, then maybe it would get there. Dennis Rodman was pretty open about his time in WCW. Again, I wish they could have gotten Karl Malone. They had DDP there talking about it. This was fun. I love the approach that they take with this. And they did another Untold with Kurt Angle and HBK that I thought was a lot better. The reason was they had David Shoemaker, who was the talking head as far as the media goes for the Untold Rodman versus Malone. And he was very good. He's very good at what he does. But the idea that Rodman and Malone, like, you looked at it and you're like, oh my gosh, okay, they've done some training. No, they were bad. They were still very bad. By brand new standards, they were all right. Like, I think they're better than Tyson Fury, but they were still very bad. I wish they would have followed up on Rodman's experiences in WCW a little bit more after that, as well as maybe even his time on Hogan's reality show, but it was fine. It was pretty good. The Untold Angle versus Shawn Michaels was awesome. They went through their match moment by moment, and this is what I want to see more of. I got to see more of these, of like guys like this, showing each other their mutual respect or not. I want to see Austin versus Bret Hart. I want to see Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels. I want to see TLC matches. I want to see Razor Ramon versus the 1-2-3 Kid and all that stuff. They've done a lot of this where they'll sit them side by side and then go through it. But this one hit a lot harder. It showed the lead up and Sherry Martel, man, rest her soul. Rest her soul. I'm glad she got some shine here because I loved seeing her back doing the Sexy Kurt song. That was unbelievable. Unbelievable. She was so good, man. So good. There's also The Undertaker's Last Ride, which I am incredibly compelled to watch. This was a 12-13 minute first look. And I don't know how far back they go. Are they going as far back as the Roman Reigns match, or is it him trying to keep in? I didn't pay incredible detail to it. It was background noise while I was working, but I don't know if it was the tag match or his singles match. But there has not been an Undertaker documentary in 20 years, or 19 years if I'm being specific. I have a copy of Undertaker, This Is My Yard. American Badass Day 2001. And that was really the closest look that you would get into him. People always ask, oh, what people would you want to interview if you could? Undertaker, Vince McMahon, Ted Turner. The three that haven't been done to death. Ted Turner has been deposed here and there. Vince McMahon's done a couple interviews and Undertaker's done a couple interviews, but there aren't a lot of heavy documentaries. There's the McMahon documentary from 05, but although that was good, it was incredibly incomplete. There's still a lot of work to be done there. The Undertaker, well, yeah, he should get a full series. In reality, The Undertaker should probably get like a 25-part series. And not just on this final run. He should get one from along the way, and I mean in detail, unlike any other superstar in WWE history ever has. This should be a major drawing point to the WWE Network. Once a month, you get another documentary feature about The Undertaker. And I'm talking about independent of this. I don't care if it's got to be done annually, like per year, like 2000, 2001, 2002, covered each time. Or if it covers different aspects of it. Aspects of his career, because you're going to get some redundant stuff. You don't want to watch a Kane episode three times. But this guy deserves a look unlike anybody else, and I think we're going to get that with this. Chronicle Drew McIntyre. This one, it was weird, because obviously they were setting it up for his title match, and it was instead him finding out about COVID-19 and the changes to WrestleMania and all that. This one, I agree with CM Punk, who had said, oh, he's always saying this nasty stuff about himself, like he wouldn't have been ready. Drew McIntyre sells himself way too short and gives WWE way too much credit. He is an ultimate company guy. He always talks about working hard and having passion and how the roster doesn't have any passion if they're complaining about their spots. And of course, he's thankful to Vince McMahon for providing him the opportunity in which he's been provided, and I understand that completely. He is in a spot, however, that Vince McMahon said he was going to be in 10, 11 years ago, and now here he is. It was humbling to watch him as he discovered the most important moment of his career was going to happen in front of nobody, and that there was a good chance that it might not happen at all. That was very sobering to see, and I felt really bad for him because I know how hard that guy works. I hear it from a lot of people. His passion in wrestling is, I don't want to say unrivaled, but it's right up there, and I've felt that way since his TNA days. I transcribed an interview with him, and his passion exuded through the telephone from an interview from another guy, and it became quite clear. This was solid, but I feel like it could have used a little bit more substance. And he did get a little lighthearted about it, saying, I'm about to stay on the Skype line with you for doing this interview with me because I just want to talk to somebody. Man, this guy has worked so hard and he had his moment adjusted, not taken away from him because nobody will ever forget this WrestleMania. But it was definitely adjusted in a way. Being the Elite has turned into a makeshift backyard wrestling show, and I dig it. A lot of the California, all the California wrestlers can't make it out to All Elite Wrestling, so they're doing matches on Being the Elite. They have Brandon Cutler, Peter Avalon, SCU, which is Scorpio Sky, Frankie Kazarian, and Christopher Daniels, a jobber team, and the Young Bucks. The jobber team faced SCU this past week, lost. They're facing, or no, they faced the Young Bucks last week and lost. Now they're facing SCU in a squash match this week. You have Peter Avalon and Brandon Cutler teaming up against SCU. I dig that. You'll be able to get a couple singles matches out of them too, since they're doing the Who is the Biggest Loser gimmick. I think eventually you'll be able to do on BTE Peter Avalon versus Brandon Cutler to see who gets the first win, and then both of them need to lose. They both need to end in a draw. I dig this. I like this. It keeps them in the ring. They can use some of this footage on AEW if it fits. If it's up to quality and it fits, they can use some of this footage and rock with it. Speaking of rock with it, I got to give Ethan Page credit. He had the Body Guy Extravaganza scheduled for WrestleMania week, and he ran into the sad situation that many wrestling promoters did, that he could not run his show, but he still kind of did. With the help of an A-plus dude in Matt McKnight, who I think the world of, a great dude, he did an illustrated version of Body Guy Extravaganza with some audio over top of it, with some voiceovers. And when he put out there, oh, I'm still doing it, I knew he wasn't going to still do a show for many reasons. He couldn't have got all those people together. They weren't going to fly anybody in. He wasn't leaving Canada. But this guy's really creative. I mean, he's a vlogger, he's a promoter, he's a wrestler, he does his own social media. He's very good at that stuff. He produces and edits his own stuff. But he's such a creative dude, and I thought this was such a creative idea. And creative people should be rewarded. I like stuff like that. Matt Hardy, very creative. Joey Janela, very creative. GCW, very creative. Man, is it any surprise that Ethan Page runs a successful wrestling promotion? Because to me, it's not. He's thinking of new moves, new ways to produce content, ways to make you know who he is. Stuff like that should be recognized, and Ethan Page went above and beyond and did something very cool and very different. Really awesome. And big shout out to Impact Wrestling for promoting that for him, putting that on their social media. They didn't have to do that. I thought that was really awesome. Dark Side of the Ring. We are 4 episodes and 3 stories in, and I haven't necessarily published a full review of these, and I think I'm going to start, whether it be at the end of a Backstage Report podcast or whatever that may be, but the Chris Benoit 2-part story was one of the best I have ever seen in any wrestling documentary history. Chavo Guerrero had a big hand in it. I think he had a producer role. They had David Benoit there, Chris Jericho. They had Nancy Benoit's sister. I do think that they maybe played up Nancy Benoit's wrestling career a little bit. I don't know that she was as influential as maybe they indicated, but hey, you know what? She was a little bit before my time, so maybe I'm out of my depth there. As far as the Chris Benoit aspect, I thought it was a really fair look at the man and what he went through, because I don't speak about Chris Benoit himself very often. It's a subject that I don't want to touch. I mean, was he one of the greatest performers in wrestling history? Yes. I don't watch his matches. I don't watch his content. I don't do any of that. If it's a special request from a long-time Fightful Select subscriber, I might. But other than that, I don't want to touch that stuff. I don't want anything to do with it. And this was the most Chris Benoit content I had taken in years, and I feel for his family. I think the world of Chris Jericho getting Nancy's sister and Chris's son back together. I do wish they could have gotten Kevin Sullivan for this, but understandable that they didn't. Jim Ross on Dark Side of the Ring is nothing short of phenomenal. Transparent, honest. At least in several of the episodes that I've seen, you could debate the Brawl for All thing, but I thought he was awesome. And you got to see footage that had never been out there. You got to see photos that had never been out there. You see and hear about things that you didn't know about. There were aspects of this, like for instance, William Regal, knowing that things might be up and carefully crafting his speech because he lived in the same city as Nancy and Chris. And maybe he knew a little bit more about the friction between those two than a lot of people realized. This was one of the greatest pieces of wrestling documentary in ever. You had Tyson Dukes playing Chris Benoit in the shadow features. I thought that was really good as well. Worth every part of the two-part series. The death of Eddie Guerrero was as, I don't want to say as big of a part, but such an integral role of this. And you never knew how tore up Chris Benoit really is. I mean, crying in Eddie's bed with his pillow, that's a little bit beyond what I expected. And there were a lot of aspects of Eddie's passing that I didn't realize. Like, I didn't know that everybody came by and saw him and that he passed away in Chavo's arms. Man, did that hurt to hear. The Brawl for All episode, I thought that was fine. I mean, I did a long-form feature on this 4 years ago, and outside of the conversations with Bart Gunn, there wasn't anything really new. I had spoken to Vince Russo. I spoke to Jim Ross. I spoke to Bruce Pritchard, Sean Waltman, Dan Severn, Butterbean. I talked to all of those. You can search it on Google. Brawl for Not, N-A-U-G-H-T. And then type in Fightful after that because I've done a revisited version. So there wasn't really much new information. I thought that they could have added a little bit more to Dan Severn and Steve Blackman being in there and pulling out than what they did. I thought they nailed it on the head with Godfather, though. When I watched those, when Blackman and Severn were out, I looked at Godfather and I was like, man, he's got the best technique out of anybody. And I'm talking like this wasn't great boxing technique or anything, but it was solid. It was okay. I've seen a lot worse. The one thing I don't like, though, is it seems like once a year, they're turning one of these episodes into Cornette versus Russo, and I don't want that. If I wanted to hear that, I would tune in to a Jim Cornette podcast. I do not need it to be Cornette versus Russo. And I had heard about a month ago that Cornette blew up, and I'm done with it. If I wanted to hear them talk about each other, I would search out the YouTube video because I felt like they dedicated way too much of the Montreal Screwjob to that. Way, way, way more than they should have. So for them to go back to that well again for the Brawl for All episode, that was a little bit disappointing for me. It was disappointing for me. I'll probably isolate this clip and put it on YouTube for our YouTube viewers to check out. So if you're enjoying this, check it out. Subscribe to FightfulSelect.com. That's the most direct way to support us. I do reviews of shows. Alex does Sour Graps reviews of Raw and SmackDown. I give you backstage news on the Backstage Podcast about 20-25 minutes. I do a Q&A show. There's lots of cool stuff there, but New Jack's Dark Side of the Ring. New Jack was the person that got me interested in shoot interviews. Didn't care about him before. I'd see clips of the RF stuff, and I didn't want anything to do with those because of what Rob Feinstein does and did. But I watched Forever Hardcore. It was a Jeremy Borash documentary, a companion piece to the rise and fall of ECW. And to say that New Jack stole the show would be an understatement. If you watched the bonus features and the actual feature, then this Dark Side of the Ring was not a surprise to you. Outside of his home life early on, it was not a surprise. They covered Gypsy Joe at length. In fact, Dark Side of the Ring conveniently left out the fact that Gypsy Joe was headbutting New Jack in his nose, punching him in the neck, did a whole lot of stuff before New Jack snapped and beat the living shit out of him. I thought that they covered the SMW stuff fantastically. That's one aspect that, of course, Forever Hardcore didn't dive into, because why the hell is Forever Hardcore going to dive into SMW? But having Jim Cornette there, having New Jack there to talk about the SMW days was awesome. I feel like Mustafa should have been a bigger part of this, especially since he was on the post show. But then you hear about the Vic Grimes stuff. And they played that down a little bit because on Forever Hardcore, New Jack says that he tried to physically move the ring and the scaffolding and all that stuff. Or they tried to move the scaffolding and do all this stuff because he wanted Vic Grimes to land on the ring post and die. He wanted Vic Grimes to die. Damn. As far as the stabbing incident, he had confirmed back then that the guy, Trip Red, or whatever the hell his name is, was like, hey, take me on the road with you. Train me. Then I'll drop the charges. And back then, I remember him going, they said I stabbed him 14 times. I did not. It was 9. It's on the tape. It was 9. So to hear him switch to 12 or 16, whatever it may be, that's disappointing to me because I have quoted, they said I stabbed him 14 times. I did not. It was 9. Repeatedly. Dark Side of the Ring, it keeps being good, man. It keeps being good. And the numbers that you see that get dropped the following day aren't really fair. Not really fair. Dark Side of the Ring is heavily viewed. This type of content is just eaten up. Eaten up. The Benoit Part 1 has been viewed 2.7 million times on YouTube alone. The Brawl for All on YouTube, a pirated version, 500,000 times. So that 200,000 that you see there, not necessarily an accurate reflection of the viewership. New Jack, I think it's over 700,000 times. Third party on YouTube. Well worth a watch. I hope you all enjoyed this SRS Reviews podcast. If you're checking out this clip on YouTube, I also take a very heavy look at Untold, Angle versus HBK, Ethan Page's Body Guy Extravaganza, WWE 24 with Edge, The Undertaker Last Ride, Untold with Rodzilla Runs Wild, Chronicle Drew McIntyre, Being the Elite, and the comeback, Tegan Knox. Until next time, we're out.